again, and welcome to part two of a series of episodes on trust. Thanks for sticking with me. If you're listening to this one and you have not caught the first episode, I encourage you to go back. The first episode on this topic is very foundational information on the law of trust. You know, what is a trust? How are trusts taxed? Who are the actors in a trust? Some basic things that are really helpful to know before we dive into some more advanced topics. And in this episode, I'm going to cherry pick a few advanced topics that I tend to get questions about often. And again, this is not intended to be a fulsome review of trust law. This is intended to be very much an issue identification episode to give you some basics on some of the things that you might be hearing about trust. So the first thing I want to talk about is beneficiaries of a trust. And in the first episode, I talked about the difference between a capital and an income beneficiary. But I want to address here some of the issues around adding or removing beneficiaries of a trust. So it is really important that when you're creating a trust, you want to give some serious thought to who the beneficiaries are going to be. And it is possible to remove people from a trust, and the trustees, as long as they have the power to remove within the trust deed. So you're going to look at that written legal agreement and see whether they have the power to do so. They can do up a set of minutes and they can remove somebody from a trust. But when you choose to add somebody to a trust, you have to give some consideration first to whether there'll be a tax consequence to doing that. And this is because there's some old commentary from Canada Revenue Agency that's been kicking around since like the early 90s. And if you're going to want to geek out on this, it's the CRA Views document 9209655. And CRA states in that document, listen, if you vary a trust, it could result in CRA concluding that you have resettled the trust. So essentially concluding that the trust has sold all of its stuff and reacquired it, which could create a tax consequence. And they said that if this variation or this change to the trust is of a sufficient magnitude, and if it could cause a fundamental change in the terms of the trust, that could be sufficient to trigger this. And they've also released a views document in 2008 that said when new beneficiaries are added, the rights of existing beneficiaries can be diminished, can be lessened, can be made smaller. And this could result in a disposition of part of a bundle of rights of a beneficiary. So you have to be careful if you're adding in a beneficiary. Are you triggering, in CRA's mind, a disposition of an interest in a trust? And if you are, there could be a tax consequence. Now, I was talking about this at another event, and somebody pulled up an old CRA views document from 2001, and then they repeated this again in 2012, which was interesting. And it appears that in certain circumstances, CRA has made an exception to this rule. When you're adding a beneficiary pursuant to an explicit provision in the trust deed, I still think you're running a risk, and it's important that your clients understand that risk if you're adding people in, but it is much easier to remove than it is to add. If you're making changes to beneficiaries, or I mean, if you're making any changes to your trust, it's very important that that be documented in writing. So there should be minutes of trustees. You're going to want to make sure you're tying into whatever provisions in the trust deed are saying that you can do what it is that you're doing. So you want to make sure you're documenting your authority and you're doing it contemporaneous with whatever change is being made. The second issue I want to talk about is some other trusts that we sometimes use in the estate planning context. And the first one that I want to talk about is an alter ego trust. Now, I have also sometimes personally joked about how the tax chick is like my alter ego. It's like the Sasha Fierce to my Beyonce. An alter ego trust is kind of like that. It's almost like you take yourself and you like clone yourself and you've created a separate taxpayer. And it is a creature that comes out of the Income Tax Act. It is only available if you're over the age of 65 years. It has to have been created after 1999. And there are very specific rules about what can be in the trust deed. So it has to stipulate that only the individual who has created this trust is entitled to benefit from the trust assets while they're alive. And then on their death, the assets can pass to whoever that this person wants. So if I was to make an alter ego trust, the Amanda alter ego trust, I would be the settlor of that trust. I would also be the trustee of that trust, and I would be the beneficiary of that trust. And so you think, well, Amanda, why would you do that? What are the benefits of doing that? Well, one of the big benefits is it has the potential to avoid estate administration fees, so like probate fees on death. The assets are not actually owned by me when I die. They're owned by an alter ego trust. And so therefore, they pass outside of my estate. In addition, in provinces where there is something called wills variation rules or dependents relief legislation. So this is legislation where people can seek an interest in your estate because they fall into certain categories. And they can say, hey, I'm supposed to get a piece of this person's estate. Anything in an alter ego trust will fall outside of that. It's not going to be able to be grabbed or captured by those groups of individuals. The cool thing about these types of trusts is you can put stuff into those trusts on what we call a tax deferred basis. We push the tax problem down the road. Because although this alter ego trust avoids probate fees on death, it doesn't stop the tax burden from happening on death. So although you can make these transfers prior to your death and you can create this trust, on your death, there is still a deemed disposition of everything, including the stuff that you own in this alter ego trust. So there's still going to be a tax consequence. And I think that's a bit of a misconception by people who create these alter ego trusts is they say, well, hey, I'm avoiding tax on my death too. No, you're not. You're just going to be avoiding the probate portion of the estate. And depending on what province you're in and depending on what the size or the amount of the assets are, you do want to figure out, well, what benefit is that actually to you? What would the probate fees have been? What would the process for probate have been in your province? And is it really worth it? The other big pro to having an alter ego trust that some of my clients like to have is the privacy element. Because if the assets in the alter ego trust do not need to be probated, then they don't need to form part of the court documents that you file with the court in your province to get probate. And a court document is arguably a public document. Anybody from the public can go there and see what you filed. And so if people would prefer not to have their assets listed out and the values of those assets listed out, this is another option that is available. Now, there are, of course, drawbacks to this type of a trust, including cost to set it up, to maintain it. There's also a bit of a loss of control and some flexibility. And there's no long-term tax savings. There's a tax deferral. There can be restrictions on what you can use the stuff in the trust for. And so if you also want to do some charitable giving or other things, there can be some restrictions to that. And there's also some potential for a U.S. tax exposure because, as I mentioned in episode one on this topic, trusts in Canada are taxed differently than trusts in the U.S. And so it's very important to figure out what your trust and how your trust would be treated if there is a potential for a U.S. tax to apply on that particular trust. So there are some drawbacks. Another type of trust that's similar to these alter ego trusts is also referred to as a joint spousal or partner trust. It's the same type of idea, except that both you and your spouse can be beneficiaries during the lifetime of the trust. So only you and your spouse would have the right to use the income and capital in the trust during lifetime. Those are two trusts that you may, if you're a client or if you're a taxpayer here, you may hear about these types of trusts and have them recommended to you. And these are some of the big pros and cons on them. Again, it's very, very fact specific, but that's a bit of an overview. Now, it is also important to consider when you're including trusts as part of your planning, what the family law implications are of doing that. So what do I mean? Well, in many provinces, an interest in a trust is considered to be family property or that type of property that is defined by provincial legislation as being divisible on a separation or a divorce. And this can be a bit of a pickle for people because oftentimes mom and dad will set up a trust. They'll put their kids as beneficiaries of the trust. The kids grow up, they enter into relationships. And they may not even know that they're part of a trust, or they may not be receiving regular distributions from the trust, but then they end up separating and divorcing and/or divorcing from a spouse of theirs. And suddenly their interest in this family trust, which probably owns shares in their family's company, comes to the table. And the question becomes, what's this trust valued at? What's the interest in the trust valued at? And can that be divided? So it's very important to give thought to this at the time that the trust is being created. and to make sure that if you're an advisor talking about this, that you're kind of warning your clients about this. Of course, if there is a valid interspousal agreement that is created between the spouses, that can exempt certain property from being divisible. But there's a lot of back and forth in the case law as to how an interest in a trust is valued, and it is not consistent across the country. So some courts have said, you know, if it's a truly discretionary trust, that the trustee makes all the decisions and can do whatever they want, that everyone's interest is worth zero. Because unless the beneficiary is also a trustee, they may never receive anything from the trust. Other courts have said, no, you take the value of the stuff that's in the trust and you divide it by the amount of beneficiaries. And that will tell you what each beneficiary's value is in the trust. We have other court cases that say, well, let's look at the history. So what control does the beneficiary have? What have they been receiving from the trust to date? And that all starts to impact what the value of the trust is. So very important to consider, because these can be quite valuable and can cause a pretty big issue on a separation or a divorce. Similarly, the other issue you have to keep in mind is that trusts have the potential to cause association between various companies. Privately held companies that are incorporated in Canada and are not controlled by non-residents of Canada and carry on an active business in Canada are generally entitled to what we know is a lower corporate tax rate that is called, you know, the small business limit or small business deduction. You'll hear that reference. And it's on the first $500,000 of their net Canadian active business income, which is great. Any corporations that qualify for this really like it. It helps to reduce their tax burden in Canada. But if you have corporations that are subject to a form of common control, so like the same people might be in both companies and be controlling both companies, they have to share that business limit. And one of the sneaky ways where two companies can actually be connected is through these family trusts and through the beneficiaries of a trust. So if I have a trust that controls a corporation and a beneficiary under that trust also controls another company, these two corporations can actually be connected. And we've often seen this pop up in Saskatchewan amongst our farming families, where we'll have one farming family that has a family trust, and let's say their daughter is a beneficiary, and that daughter ends up marrying the son of another farming family who happens to be the beneficiary of his family. Family's family trust. And it can actually connect these two families together from a tax perspective, which is usually not intended. And so it is very important to kind of consider when you're figuring out who your beneficiaries of the trust will be, are there any connections? And to highlight the potential red flag for this so that before you actually have the connection occur, you can decide if you want to try to sever that connection. And there are many different ways that you can accomplish that. Also really important to remember that, you know, with trust, there is ongoing maintenance of a trust. And as a trustee, you have obligations. You have to keep records. In Alberta, there are new rules that came out where trustees have to do certain reporting to beneficiaries. There are privacy considerations to keep in mind. You may have bank accounts that you're maintaining. And now you have these new trust reporting rules that I'm going to talk about in the next episode. And so if you're agreeing to be a trustee of a trust, it's really important that you're aware of what the trust deed says are your responsibilities, and also what the relevant law in your province says, and then what are the tax considerations. So being a trustee is an important role. It's what we call a fiduciary. It has a higher level of duty. You are responsible for something, and you can be held accountable for your actions, and you can be held liable for your actions as a fiduciary. So very important to make sure that you recognize that once you set the trust up, it doesn't mean you can just pretend it's not there. There's going to be ongoing maintenance, ongoing responsibilities, and you're responsible for understanding that. So that is the section 2 on trust. Now stay tuned for the third episode, which will talk about the new trust reporting rules, some information on bare trusts, a quick little liability waiver at the end of this. These views and thoughts and opinions that I expressed in this episode are mine. They do not belong to or are necessarily the views of, you know, the organizations I'm a part of or my law firm. In addition, this is not legal advice. I do encourage you to consult with your legal advisor for specific advice. Thank you so much for sticking with me in this episode. If you want to learn more, connect with me on LinkedIn, connect with me on Instagram at tax.chick. You can also email me at thetaxchickpodcast@gmail.com. And also check out my website, www.thetaxchick.ca, for more information. I hope this was helpful. Check out the third episode in this series to learn a bit more.